collection today, if you scroll down to where the blue goes away and they there's the non-colored sections, that's where we're going to begin. Okay, Mike?
Yeah, that sounds good. So we're going to start on line 25 of the spreadsheet.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Well, good. It looks like with the WebEx, we have it up today, so we can kind of read over the recommendation and then discuss it. So we're on this one from the American Urological Association about data feasibility. Is everybody on the WebEx, or should we go ahead and check? I can go ahead and read it anyways, I guess. Data element feasibility assessment. Data in a structured format deserves further consideration. The current availability of structured data is largely dependent on the quality and prevalence of vendor-developed templates. Providers may find a suitable template that can capture information in structured fields with one EHR product, but may have to input this data by free text in another due to the lack of available structured fields. Furthermore, existing templates that facilitate structured data capture may have poor usability, so providers may elect in certain circumstances to send relevant data more quickly in narrative form. Therefore, feasibility assessment of data elements should not solely evaluate an e-measure based on the presence of existing structured data fields, but rather on the type of data needed and suitability for capture in structured form.
Go ahead.
I don't know that we, I think they're asking to allow like unstructured text as in the dictation to count, and I don't think that would make it more, I think that would make it less feasible, right? Am I reading that correctly?
I think that's part of it. And then they say, you know, but rather on the type of data needed and the suitability for captured in structured form.
Oh, I see. So you're saying if you could, is it still efficient to do so?
So to me, they're mixing up certain concepts here. I mean, I think we have to make it clear that we want structured fields, and if they – and. Again, they're mixing up some workflow issues too, but the issue of basically transmogrifying text fields into structured fields, I think we need to maybe have a little paragraph about, and that may be possible, but we need to you know, that needs to be worked on, you know, by the gurus, if you will. I mean, one option is to have a pick list and plus free text, but there are many ways to skin that cat, including natural language processing and things like that.
I think the prototype of this is this whole smoking status. It makes sense that it'd be captured in structured form, but you know, in systems where you have to click five times, I wouldn't consider that feasible. I think that's a bit of what they're saying. And it goes back to usability of EHRs. We want to make sure that vendors understand that it's not just the presence or absence of a structured field. It's that it has to be very accessible during the usual workflow.
Again, I mean, I'm reading ahead to the next comment. That's a workflow issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. And I think we've captured that issue as part of workflow. So I mean, I kind of agree with the and when they say, but rather on the type of data needed and suitability for capture, yeah, either that's a very subjective request, or, I mean, I think it is captured in workflow.
In other words, we're in agreement with them in some sense that we can just, you know, that it has to be efficient and natural, not just coded.
Okay. Let's move on to the next one.
May I make a few comments?
Oh, yes, please do.
It's hard. I think the vendors and the providers say something is feasible, they just mean that it doesn't mean that there is an existing form which captures that information. I think they mean that you could have a form, and if a user used it, then it would be reasonable to capture in their workflow because they already capture that information. So we would not say, and I don't think a provider would necessarily say, we already have a form for that, so therefore it's feasible. anything could be captured in a structured way in usual clinical documentation that could be used for quality measurement, most of which is not captured in discrete form and could be if they were to make everything into a form. So, you know, I think there's an issue of when we say something is feasible, does that mean, oh, yes, right now, today, we already capture it in discrete form and no modification at all would be required?
This
I think that's probably too stringent of a definition.
This is Carrie Christensen from the AMA-PCPI, and I agree with you, Howard, but I would add the caveat that we need to be very careful about what we're talking about the feasibility of, and we're talking about the feasibility of the measurement. So to some extent, to say something is feasible today, to me, that means I can go calculate this measure today, as opposed to the feasibility of an EHR collecting information, which is something slightly different.
It seems that if something is already captured in structured data today in a, you know, and meets the other criteria that we talk about in that it's in a standardized workflow that doesn't put undue burdens and whatnot, one can say that that's feasible and the data element would score well, but that is not the only way that a data element can score well in this. I mean, we have in here the issue of what's going to happen in the future. We have some, so I think this has already kind of been addressed by the overall framework that we have. And it's, again, you know, just being able to measure it now says a lot about the fact that it might be feasible, but it doesn't mean that if you don't capture it now, it's not feasible.
Isn't this what we meant by the two columns, you know, now and then three or 5 years?
Yeah, I think that's part of it as well.
All right, well, let me give you an example and see what you think of this. I could type something that has meaning, and because I'm typing it, it's not going to be captured in a discrete way. If I stopped typing it and instead I used a tool that I created, which I would have to remember to use, that would would fill in my note with certain text, and then that would be captured. If I use that tool, it would be captured in a discrete way. But if I just did what I usually do, which is type, it wouldn't. Would that be, if someone were evaluating that situation, would they give that a high score for feasibility or a low score for feasibility?
Well, you go through the whole form that we have, and you'd evaluate it on that. So, if it was a difficult workflow that it created to try to capture that in a structured format, it would score low on workflow. It might score if the form was linked to a coded data element that met all the other criteria, it could score high there. Under data accuracy, I guess that's the question of whether we thought, then it may not score. It may score medium there as well if it's not a workflow that we feel is going to be used very often.
Well, I'd be interested in hearing Shannon's perspective on that issue.
I mean, you guys know I'm a heartless pragmatist. I think that, you know, feasibility, helpful, what we can do right now for most measure developers. Five-year window, I think we've discussed previously, if it's possible in the future, it really depends on if the body that's either imposing penalties or incentives choose, they can do that. But our goal is to provide them with a reasonable framework that assesses better. But the fact that you can capture, I agree with Howard, I can capture anything in a structured way. It's just that I have to browbeat my providers into doing it, and that makes the feasibility a lot lower and certainly the reliability down the road a lot lower because it's not going to viable if I'm really forcing them to do something that doesn't exist in their current workflow. It takes years for that to become viable. Is that fair?
Shannon, I think, though, doesn't our system account for that under data accuracy where it says, 3, 2, or 1? 2 is the information may not be from the most authoritative source and or has a moderate likelihood of being correct. and we say EG self-reported vaccination. But that might also be that if it's a, you know, if we're expecting providers to collect it in a part of the EHR that they don't use very often, I would perhaps that would score a two. Likewise, if it was a workflow that required four or five clicks where they would usually just type something into their note, I think it would score low on workflow. So, I mean, I guess my point is that I think we've tried to address this very issue in our scoring system, and so that to be flexible to say that, you know, you can have that data element, but it might not score that well, and it might be an area that needs to, you know, take a little bit more focus.
I'm sorry, it's Howard. I disconnected myself and then I got back on.
Okay.
I think that the reason I'm dwelling on this issue is I think it's an important point. I think we as a committee should have an idea of a given scenario, whether it should score well or whether it should score low. And I'm not sure that we're clear on that. I think that we were pushing during our in-person meeting and on subsequent calls that the threshold for feasibility not be very high, meaning that it shouldn't be that many, many things are scored infeasible and only a few things are scored as feasible. It should rather be a lower threshold, so in fact many existing things are scored feasible. But I think if we say that if I had to build a tool to capture discrete data, because almost all my providers are just writing text, and then they would have to remember to use that tool. If we're saying that that's an example of infeasibility, then many, many things are going to be scored as infeasible, and we should have a position on that.
Howard, I think you might have been disconnected, but I thought Mike did an excellent job of showing how, if you consider all of the parameters or attributes at once, it does give an indication of what is likely to be feasible now. And so you can't take any one in isolation. The other thing is we do have to make progress. In your example, you could either dictate vital signs or put vital signs in. Well, the world has decided that vital signs are very important, and I think most physicians believe that. And we have workflows, which doesn't necessarily involve the physician, to make sure it gets in structured form. So we're making these kinds of judgments as we go through each of these criteria. They just can't be considered in isolation. So I think we've gone through this point many, many times, and I really like the way Mike had presented the way that the total scoring does account for these different considerations.
But I think what Mike said is that that situation would score low overall.
Well, it would score. I mean, it may be medium. It kind of depends on the specific data element that we're talking about, and it wouldn't score perfect, that's for sure, and nor should it. But it doesn't mean that an imperfect score, you know, doesn't mean that something's not feasible. And we kind of have gotten away from saying either, you know, plus or you know, feasible or not feasible. It's a degree of feasibility. So you will have the opportunity to score an element that scores really high, would probably be one that's, like you said, a vital sign or a lab result that we feel is, you know, it should score very high versus something that does require a convoluted workflow that people aren't going to use that often would score very low. But then there's going to be a lot of things in the middle. And actually, Paul's example of smoking status, how do you know, in my practice, smoking status is now captured as it needs to be for meaningful use, and it's accurate. I mean, when I go through and my MAs, my medical assistants capture it before I get in the room and click on the right button, and then when I ask the patient, it's right. I mean, so that's an example where it is, you know, there's a little bit more workflow involved in it than a lab result, but it's now a highly accurate data element that does include clicking boxes.
If most of what we were worried about were vital signs, lab results, and smoking status, this committee would not even need to exist. What we're dealing with and what all the commenters are dealing with are all of the other kinds of data that are stored in different ways and are much more complex in general than those elements, which are very simple.
And this is Helen, just to build on something Howard was saying. Apologies, I'm outside if it's loud. But I also wonder if part of what Howard is saying is whether we also need to scale the potential for an element to become feasible in some way that actually has some grounding in it. Just a thought.
Well, again, I guess I think we have two columns. One is for current, one is for medium future, 3 to 5 years.
Well, the issue here is current. We're not really talking about future.
This is Martha. I think also we need to throw a little bit of this back on the vendors, and maybe if there's any vendors on, please say something. I mean, we need to be clear that items need to be captured in some sort of structured format, and that there's always a tension between text and structured format, and that there may be innovative ways to convert text into structured format. Some of that involves more workflow by the clinicians because they have to do two things, basically pick a category and write text. Or you could have some other method for making that easier for the clinician that almost certainly will involve natural language processing of some sort.
All right. Well, I'm a vendor on the call. This is Sarah Corley, and I'll tell you that I don't think that right now NLP is at a level where we want to accept the liability for it incorrectly populating something because, you know, the patient safety implications are huge.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think that's fine, but again, this gets into now versus future, and maybe it's not feasible now, but we need to kind of work on NLP in order to make it more feasible in future. I'm just saying.
As a vendor, our goal is to put in our product what our clients need to get their work done in a safe, efficient fashion, meeting their regulatory demands. But, when we look at the tension between all of this, reporting requirements, it's that our clients do not want to enter information that's not necessary for the provision of the care that they are giving at that point. Now, we understand the need, particularly in the primary care arena, to take the opportunity when the patient is in the office to make sure that you are doing the services that patient needs, no matter whether they're in for a sprained ankle and they're not in for their diabetic follow-up. But we get a tremendous amount of pushback for that. And it's certainly easier for us to put things in a structured format. But then the whole note bloat and notes that all sound alike get pushback as well. And so I think that the whole health IT organization needs to really try and think what we're going to do, capture the data elements that, I'm sure some researcher might want this data element because it would be great for your project, but we can't be crippling doctors that are struggling. We really need to, for right now, do what's part of the workflow, understand the feasibility of what is commonly part of the workflow and what should reasonably be the expectation. And the goal for the future certainly would be, as we transform our healthcare system and allow for more team-based care without fear of, regulatory oversight that, the doctor didn't do it themselves, they can't get paid, to collect more data elements and to have more patient-collected data elements and certainly to mine using NLP. But, right now is a different world than what we hope will be the future.
Hey, Howard. So do you have a recommendation? I mean, so we have a four-part strategy or evaluation system now with data availability, data accuracy, data standards, and workflow to try to kind of assess whether or not, the level of feasibility of any one particular data element is. And are you concerned that most of them are going to score kind of at the same low level and we're not going to be able to differentiate, or is there an additional axis that we should be looking at?
I think my main concern is that suppose somebody got this report when it was published and they said, okay, now we're going to, now we have to do measure feasibility ratings. Hey, committee, you did this report. Here are five scenarios that we have to evaluate, and we're going to explain them to you in great detail. And we want to know from you, in these five examples, what feasibility score we should be giving. I think that we should have an answer for that. Based on our discussions, we should have a general understanding about what this means, so that if we were to look at these scenarios, we would all agree within reason what the score would be. And I'm concerned that instead what's going to happen is we wouldn't be able to answer that question in a consistent way, because I don't think we're quite clear about what kind of feasibility scores ought to be given out in usual situations, in the situations that anyone might be dealing with.
Okay, I think that's a fair request would be to, but that's probably, you know, kind of the, I think our process has been to get a system out there and to start putting it through use and seeing how it works. So, you know, you have to start somewhere, and I think that's what we've tried to do here. Now, getting, if it's five scenarios, you know, maybe enough where, I don't know if it's this group or another group or somebody that comes back together and looks hard at those and says, you know, and this is an example, this is how we would score it. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Well, I'm not saying we need to publish five examples. Ideally, that would be nice, but we probably don't have the ability to do that. But
yeah.
I think we should at least agree among ourselves what a feasibility score would be in different situations. And I am concerned that the real-world application of this scale may be that everybody, or that many, many elements get scored low, which I don't think any of us think is a good thing. I think that we've actively discussed the fact that that would be a bad outcome if the end result would be that almost everything except the absolute obvious things like what we've mentioned, vital signs, lab results, smoking status, they're the only things that get scored high and everything else gets a low score. That wouldn't be helpful to anybody.
And again, I'm just going to push back a little bit on, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. We need to have things that score reasonably high, perhaps not in the immediate future, but in the near future. And again, I would just say that I do find this vendor attitude around a liability somewhat annoying, and it sort of begs the case around what is documentation, and I think we all need to grapple with that. And the issue that, I mean, again, you have a choice. You have an easy way to enter the data that you want to enter with text that then gets transmogrified into structured. And again, there's many liability resistant ways that can be done, including saying, hey, provider, after you've entered your note, this is what's going to be entered in the quality database. Is that what you mean? And have them sign off on it. So then the vendor is out of the liability issue because they've signed off on it. So, or you insert workflow. That's fine. We can say some of this involves inserting new workflow. And if it's important enough to measure quality, then maybe it's important enough to insert workflow.
Hey, Mike, this is Zahid.
Yeah.
So,
yep, go ahead.
So I think that it seems to me, if I read the concern that they're expressing, and I agree with what Howard was saying in the context of, you know, the tool and things like that. But if we sort of maybe another way to do this is to look at their comment in a more sort of narrow sense, and it appears that they may be more concerned about our statement that under the data availability, which is within the sort of scorecard and also in the 2.1, is the data readily available in structured format, i.e. resides in fixed fields within EHR. So in other words, we sort of define availability only in structured and fixed fields, and my guess is that that's what they're reacting to, that it could be conceivable that in future a tool or whatever else might come along, and perhaps NLP might be advanced enough that someone could collect something not necessarily in fixed structured fields, but perhaps in the codified format in which the value set is needed, that in this case it might imply that that would be considered infeasible in that state. So perhaps if we could say simply that, is that data available, or do we need to fix it, that it needs to be structured, a quote-unquote fixed field, for it to be available?
We could. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting rid of the resides in fixed fields within EHRs as part of the data availability, but, and it would just read, is the data readily available in structured format? Because I think, you know, as pointed out, I don't think anybody expects that currently NLP is going to be able to take the data for us. And, I mean, this can be revised in the future. This doesn't have to be forever.
Sure. And I guess in the feasibility assessment, it would say, okay, this thing doesn't reside in any structured field, and it's not available through any other means, so it's infeasible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would score low on that part.
How
yeah.
you would define it at that point.
Yeah. You know, we actually need to – we do need to move on, but I think that – Howard, from what I took away, I mean, I think making a recommendation that we do come up with either more examples or I think is a good one. Again, I don't know that it's within the timing necessary to come out with this report, but that could be a recommendation.
Well, I do think we can move on and go ahead.
This is Carrie. I would be happy to take that offline with a small group of people. We've got some measures from one of our contract projects that I would love to do this with, and if anybody wants to participate, I'd be happy. You can just drop me an email, and we can put some time together.
Okay. Okay, so then now next we're moving on to workflow. So we've done one comment in a half hour. So workflow per se, so we're on line 26 now. Workflow per se is not characteristic of data element, but rather may affect the quality of the data collected for a specific data element. In addition, it will vary by EHR product and local implementations of those products, and even varying use patterns by individual clinicians. Workflow should be removed as a separate characteristic for testing, but instead should be understood as a mechanism that influences data accuracy and completeness, as well as location in EHR and data format. Scorecard forces the reporter to assume that all EHRs and clinicians operate similarly. This certainly will not be the case. We want to talk about that before the next, we'll look at the next paragraph as well. The overall data element feasibility scorecard document appropriately discusses two separate challenges to data element feasibility. One is whether the structure of EHR can support the documentation in the structured data, and the second is whether the clinicians will document relevant data workflow. These are two very different issues with very different implications. I believe the guidance language provided in the data availability question in the scorecard combines the two concepts and is therefore going to provide unreliable results. For example, for a score of 3, the guidance states data element is routinely collected as part of care processes that exist in the majority of EHRs. For measures not achieving a score of 3, it will not be determinable if the low score is due to structural issues with the EHR or workflow issues such that clinicians do not document in structured data fields even though the capability exists. Since the latter concern is addressed by the workflow question, I suggest the data availability question be revised to clearly represent only the issue of EHR structural capability to capture the required data elements.
So, Mike, I wonder if it's faster for us to either read off the screen or read any printout, I mean, just to save you time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's actually harder to read when somebody else is reading to you.
Okay, fair enough. So if everybody wants to finish reading that comment.
So, Mike, this is Zahid. While everybody is reading that, I thought that this is similar to something we discussed last time, wasn't it, where we discussed about the data element itself being sort of within workflow and then workflow as a separate and that potentially double counting the weight of it. inadvertently.
Yeah.
I thought we decided to keep it the way it is. I think this sort of addressing that similar issue.
This is Shannon. I'd chime in, too, that I think of what we're trying to do here is to build something analogous to the CAGE or the PHQ, too. We're trying to develop a screening instrument that helps people identify potential problems early in the process and leads to further evaluation. So my hope is certainly that the existing processes, such as the committees that are formed to build these measures and then the NQF endorsement process and public comment, would allow a deeper dive into the reasons that they may not be feasible. So I feel like we have processes in place to do a deeper dive. What we're trying to do here is build a screening mechanism that I think is pretty sound as it's constructed, and this comment doesn't dissuade me from that.
I would agree with Shannon. Anybody else want to comment on the other way before we move on?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
And I agree, too. It does touch on the exceptions, and I think we are trying to build a philosophy where we want to minimize exceptions, because once you have to read the chart, you have to read the chart, the entire chart, so that...
Okay. So basically, doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be. It's a tool to kind of uncover some issues with feasibility for specific data elements, and we think it will do that.
Mm-hmm. I think
okay.
An analogy to the screening tool is pretty interesting.
Okay. Okay. The next comment is on line 27 about data. Go ahead and read that. Any comments on that? I think we actually kind of address that under data accuracy, where we say, the likelihood of being correct, which again is somewhat subjective, but if we, if you feel that it's a field that's often cut and pasted and not reliably recorded, they would score a little bit lower there as well.
And this is Ruth. I think it goes back to Shannon's prior comment. This is a screening tool, and so the copy-paste issue, it seems that the concern is more about data quality, and that's not, although it's a factor, it's not the focus or the single focus of this assessment.
This is Chris from NQF. I completely agree that this is, with the screening mechanism comment and that this is good for kind of screening on accuracy, but is there a reason why? And I know there's some other comments that kind of touch on this, but is there a reason why accuracy is part of what we're screening for when we're checking for feasibility, as opposed to when we're checking for validity and reliability and other NQF criteria?
Chris, we're trying to account for the issue of one of the examples would be a checkbox for med reconciliation. And certainly, it's the ability to capture that data is highly feasible and pretty universal, but in terms of whether or not a real-life, clinically accurate medication reconciliation occurred, we feel like there needs to be an assessment of whether that data reflects clinical accuracy as opposed to someone just checking the box.
Right. Completely agree, but that's exactly what our validity, the data element validity criteria deals with, which is outside of our feasibility assessment when we're just generally assessing measures in general.
I think it's fair to kind of add a statement about where we think it's reasonable to assess the feasibility of accuracy based on current workflows.
And I thought that we kind of talked about understanding that this was that we were double counting validity or that validity was addressed elsewhere, but we felt that that this assessment was supposed to be done, very early on, and whereas validity may come later in the process, so this would help to kind of uncover that issue or to include that issue very early in the process as well.
And it gives an e-measure perspective on validity. So oftentimes the CSAC doesn't necessarily know whether this may be valid, but this is it really captured in an accurate, available format. So I think we're all sensitive that it there's some overlap with all these things, but we are trying to do some value add either up front or as an e-measure perspective to the validity attribute.
This is Ruth, and I agree that there is some overlap, but I wouldn't even call it overlap. I think this, from the perspective of feasibility, looking at the accuracy of data, we're not looking at validity or accuracy. We can't. We won't have the data to do that at the stage that we'll be doing feasibility, or at the multiple stages. I guess we would be looking at the potential for validity and accuracy. So it's more of a preamble to validity and accuracy, and kind of a way to steer the development process in a different direction if we find something that is simply not, we know that it's not going to be reliable, or there's a high likelihood that it's not going to be reliable based on basically feedback from vendors and providers.
All right, can we move on? Next comment, line 28.
This is Shannon. I would say that we certainly would agree with that as a group. I'm not sure how it plays into feasibility. I'd suggest we move on to the next comment.
Okay, I agree.
I agree too.
All right, line 29.
This is Shannon again. I think I would have a similar statement. I'm not sure I agree that mapping is actually a simple task. I mean, we're certainly supportive of standards, but again, I don't see how this plays into feasibility. And we've discussed workflow ad nauseum, so I'm not sure there's much.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So agree and move on. Largely okay. So next on line 30, and on the, let's see, okay, so it is all there.
I do think the commenter is correct by referring to the fact that we are inconsistent in the document about whether we refer to a single EHR or multiple EHRs. The goal of our assessment, I think we all agree, is to get representative scores from multiple EHR systems. But for any single assessment done by a single provider or vendor, it's only going to reflect one. For the most part, so the any given score is really going to again reflect one EHR vendor or one provider situation, but it's the combination of multiple assessments for a single element that's going to result in scores across vendors and across providers. I think that's confusing in the document in some cases.
Howard, this is Rebecca. I'm not totally clear on what you're trying to say. because the recommendations include, you know, assessment with multiple vendors or systems. You talked about that last time. But how do we make it more clear?
I have to identify. Sorry, I don't have. I'm not prepared to say which areas. I know the which areas of the document need to be changed, but I could go through it to identify those. But this commenter talks about page 12, and just to look where she is.
Well, this is Aldo. I think that I don't entirely agree with the comment. I'm familiar with reliability across EHR systems or across implementations, but I see that more as the output or the calculated result of the measure as to whether or not the algorithm performed as expected against a standard like a validation deck. But the ability to actually program or implement the logic, I think, is an aspect of feasibility. We want to look at that across different systems. It's a nuance, but I think they're different.
And this is Ruth, and I agree. I guess the question is, when is it feasible for us to do that kind of feasibility assessment? Because once you have a piece of logic for a particular criterion, for example, gestational age and timing around gestational age, though, so some of the feedback that we've had from vendors is that that timing piece around a particular data element may define whether or not the data element is feasible, so context is important. So in that regard, I do agree with you, Aldo. We need to make sure that we're assessing the feasibility in the right context. I would also say, though, that actually verifying that the measure computes exactly the same way across EHRs, it may be too much work put into the feasibility piece of this, and it actually transpires a little bit to the validity and reliability piece. So I guess what I'm saying is we probably should be clearer about what we mean by feasibility of the logic and how far we are expecting measure developers to go in assessing the feasibility of the logic.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's really difficult to say by looking at the logic, saying, oh, this is either feasible or not feasible to implement across multiple EHRs. You know, I'm not as familiar with the measuring authoring tool as others on this call, but it would seem, you know, if the logic can be expressed in the measure authoring tool, wouldn't that kind of make it feasible for implementation across EHRs?
This is Klutz, and no, that's the problem, is that you can express, you can actually create unfeasible logic patterns. It's sometimes the timing relationships that you're requiring in the measure are not reasonable within the workflow. Something of that nature, for instance, and again, the timing of when you're looking to capture those data elements. So let's say that you have a data element that's gestational age, and that it's actually captured in EHRs in a structured format, and that would be fine. But in your measure, you're looking for the gestational age as documented on the day of delivery, for instance. And most EHRs allow for the documentation of gestational age, and the workflow is that they document the gestational age when the patient is admitted. And so then you have a disconnect right there, that they actually don't have the data element within the time frame that you're looking for it. And that creates a feasibility issue that is a result of the logic, but not directly a data element in the value set.
See, I don't know if I would call that logic, though, or if that's feasibility, if that's what we're getting at, or if it's more, if that has to do with the workflow of that data element, because you're saying basically that it's not captured at the time you need it.
This is Shannon. I'd agree with that. I mean,
so then I think we need to clarify what we mean by a data element, because as far as I understood it, we were talking about QDM elements. So it's going to be a category, it's going to be a QDM data type attached to a value set and potentially have some attributes. When we say logic, feasibility of the logic, to me, that goes a little bit beyond that, and it goes with the timing around that QDM element, and it may involve more than one QDM element, and it would be kind of a bullet in the human readable of an e-measure. So I guess the individual criterion or criteria for an e-measure, and that's the extent. To me, that's how I see we need to evaluate in this feasibility piece the logic. I don't see that the connection of ands and ors and all of that belongs in the feasibility piece, but assessing the feasibility of individual criteria is different than assessing the feasibility of a particular QDM element.
See, I would, I mean, I think you bring up a very good point, and that's what I would, that I was thinking about more would be kind of the context of the data element within the measure might affect its feasibility. So we had talked about how we want to have a library of data elements with pre-computed feasibility, but that's probably not sufficient because, you know, the example you just gave, it might be that a data element scores one way, but there's something in particular about the way the measure is using it that makes it less feasible. And I don't know how to actually formally capture that in this assessment, other than to, you know, perhaps have a, you know, separate comment section about context-specific feasibility for a data element, or that you would actually go in and change the standard. The standard numbers in this for this case, but then getting back, so that's how I would kind of address the context issue, and that's where I think you said the same thing about the logic. If we're really talking about the ands and ors, and whether or not it can be, you know, can it be computed? I don't think we have that a formal way of evaluating that within this process. I think it was a comment that was saying that's part of feasibility in general, and maybe either we should leave that out or, you know, point out that we might want to develop some sort of, you know, there may be some sort of way of coming up with a metric just around, you know, the complexity of the logic. Anybody else?
Well, this is Chris, and I think this is where the overlap between the other criteria really, this is where it makes things confusing for me. Just looking from how the commenter frames this, and then when they quote that, you know, does the calculation algorithm work for within multiple EHR systems, to me that sounds like they're talking about you end up with measure scores that you can compare across EHR systems. And that's more about reliability than it is about, is it feasible to even get this?
Yeah, no, I would agree. So I don't know if we want. Would we agree with taking out the kind of assessment of measure logic as part of the feasibility, or are there any other super recommendations about what to do with that?
Could we add one or more EHRs?
But I think we already kind of addressed that by talking about assessing through multiple EHRs and multiple implementations when possible.
Right, but I think the specific comment is sort of addressing what Chris was saying, that the logic really needs to work in context of a whatever, even single EHR implementation, because that sort of a priori determines whether it is taking into consideration the proper context and so forth, but that the ability for it to be reliably reproduced in multiple EHRs is kind of, I guess, under a different criterion.
Well, can I suggest that I think all we really need to do is in this document make it clear that the idea here is that when a measure developer is working on a measure, they're going to take the form on page 10 and 11. They're going to send it to multiple people, multiple organizations, as many as they can get to participate. Each of those contributors that's going to fill out the form is going to do it just based on their own situation and the information that they have about their own, whether it's vendor or how they use an EHR system or otherwise. And so each of those inputs that they're going to get is going to represent one. They're going to send all these copies of these forms back to the developer. The developer is going to compile them all and then come up with a conclusion. And the conclusion is going to be ideally based on what we've recommended, an X number of providers, Y number of vendors represented, and then they're going to make a conclusion based on that. And I think if we can just make that clear, that would be fine. It's just that our language sometimes, when if on the form itself it says you're talking about majority of EHRs, which it does on page 10, it's confusing because really all you're really going to represent for the most part is one EHR.
Yeah, and I agree with Howard. I think that's sort of the concern that's being expressed, even though that's not what we mean. It's probably just not clear to them.
This is actually a comment that I've made before, and I do feel strongly about this, and I know that some of you don't, but I do think that the tool should work for a single EHR, and right now the way that the scale is set up, it doesn't allow us to evaluate a single EHR independently and then aggregate results. It's an aggregation in itself, and I think that may be where part of the confusion comes from.
I mean, that is an interesting point. So to kind of rewrite the form from the point of view of a person evaluating an implementation of an EHR, so when you look at data, so that, I think that would mostly be under data availability. I think data standards, workflow, and data accuracy can all be addressed within an implementation. Ruth, where do you see the issue with not having this be applicable to one system?
I can remember what the criterion is exactly, but you just mentioned the example, the majority of EHRs have it. So it may be data availability, but when part of the scale is the majority of EHRs, then you're already aggregating across EHRs.
Uh-huh.
You're answering the criterion. I can't really pinpoint it. I do know that some of the part of the scale is not cannot be applicable to a specific EHR.
So isn't the tool both for measure developers to ask themselves, and we could have certainly a special version that gets distributed to individual EHR vendors or individual providers who use a single EHR? Is that a problem?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. I think that's exactly right, just to kind of modify the language in the form for purposes of evaluation of a single implementation.
Right, and then provide guidance for, you know, when you get all these, like Howard was describing, the developer or whoever is doing the assessment, then they would need at least, you know, X number of those, hopefully more the better, and then that would be the sort of way to score in aggregate at that point.
Yeah, and that might be, you know, we've kind of, so, you know, another idea, another thing to do would be to actually include in this document a proposed or a possible workflow for evaluating a measure overall, which is just what we said. And I think we've kind of gone around the idea of who's actually going to be doing this and who's going to be doing the work. But if we say, you know, one example would be a measure developer would send this out to EHR, whatever that might be, but to give kind of to just specifically go through the steps of how a complete measure may be evaluated for feasibility using this tool. It could be a supplementary document or something as well.
which actually would address the first part of the comment that, you know, gave us specific guidance how we would use the tools.
Yeah.
Is there somebody who'd want to take a shot at drafting something like that on the committee?
Without volunteering anybody, but it would seem like a measured developer has most of the experience with this process, and if they would, if one of the measured developers wanted to kind of just go through a step-by-step process of how you would do it using this tool, that would be really helpful.
And Carrie said, and I don't want to volunteer Carrie for this, but Carrie, you were talking about going through some of some measures that you are developing right now. I could certainly participate as well, and we could use those as a reference point to apply the tool to.
That, yeah, and then you could actually include it as an example of how the tool could be used, as opposed to a proposed. You know, you don't want to be so prescriptive of telling people exactly how to do it, but you want to show them how it can be used.
Does that sound good to you, Carrie?
Carrie still on the line? Not.
Maybe not.
Well, she did offer to work offline, so I think we can connect offline and then and see where we can go from here.
Okay. That would be very good. Okay. And then, so we still, they do mention this one specific line, and before we move on, so we have on page 12 of the draft report, it has, in addition to the scores for additional data elements, the eMeasure feasibility assessment report should include, and then it has assessment of the feasibility of aggregate data elements and some sub-bullets, but then it also says assessment of the measure logic, and then it has sub-bullets there. Does the calculation algorithm work in multiple EHR systems? How complex is the logic? How easy is it to explain to providers? And I think the latter two, unless there's another comment about them, but how complex is the logic and how easy is it to explain to the providers is something that I think is kind of within the scope of this. I think, does the calculation algorithm work in multiple EHRs? I think it was Aldo mentioned that's really a more of a validity or a reliability issue once the measure is out there. And you could couch it as, you know, how likely is the calculation algorithm to work in multiple EHR systems, but I don't know if that, you know, if that's a, again, something that needs to be done during kind of the feasibility stage or later.
Do you want to remove it?
Yeah, I would just say remove it. Does the calculation algorithm work in multiple EHR systems? Does anybody else either agree or disagree?
This is Chris. I agree.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. All right, then moving on to the next comment on, I think that's line 31 that we're on now. I think that we are in agreement with that, and that's the idea behind this, is to use this as a method of exposing those issues early on so that you can discuss alternate data elements, alternate measures.
I would agree.
Fine.
Okay. Next, line 32.